Everybody.
Good morning, everybody. How are you?
We're glad you're here. It looks like a standing room only crowd. That's awesome. We're waiting for one other city commissioner. Is that right? Is Amanda in the room?
Yes, she is.
Okay. And Commissioner Saltzman will be a few minutes late. And this is paging. Well, top of the morning to you.
I was here first. Good morning.
Happy St. Patrick's Day. We have it's a 9:30 time certain, and we have a few things that we have to do before we get to the State of the Arts report. If you want to speak. And you don't have to, but if you want to speak, sign up on the table out front. The rules are, if you've signed up to speak, is you give us your first and last name, no address, and by city law, if you are a lobbyist, basically associated with any organization authorized to speak for them, you just have to say who you're associated with or who you're lobbying on behalf. So it's pretty simple rules. And as soon as Commissioner Leonard gets here, in the meantime, I'm very happy to announce today, I can't gavel us in until there's a quorum. In the meantime, I'm happy to announce that Portland was rated looking at all cities in the United States, we were rated as the greenest city in the United States based on lack of traffic congestion, transit use, water quality, carbon emissions, there is LEED certified projects and a number of green jobs. So not only do we have the highest participation in arts and culture events, we also are the greenest city. So congratulations. This is the Portland City Council. Today is Wednesday, St. Patrick's Day, March 17th. It's 9:30 a.m. We are in morning session. Good morning, Carla.
Good morning.
Would you please call the roll?
Fritz.
Here.
Fish. Saltzman. Leonard.
Here.
Adams.
Here. A quorum is present. We can begin. Before we get to the communications item, I'm pleased to read the following proclamation. These proclamations have proven to be very newsworthy, Commissioner Leonard. Whereas all the citizens of Portland rely on farm workers for their daily sustenance, health, and well-being, whereas children of farm workers and many other migrants are frequently excluded from access to higher education opportunities, and whereas we, the residents of Portland, honor all those who plant, cultivate, harvest, and process our agricultural products, and they are all worthy of our recognition and gratitude. Now, therefore, I, Sam Adams, Mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, do hereby proclaim March 28th through April 3rd to be Farm Worker Awareness Week, and to further proclaim March 31st to be Cesar y Chavez Day in Portland, and encourage all residents to observe this week and this day. Thank you. Round of applause for them.
No,
you have to be signed up.
We are.
Oh, well, I'm just about to call you.
Well, we were signed up to talk to this specific thing.
Yes, and I'm just about to call you, but thank you for helping me run the meeting. I appreciate it. It does take a whole village, believe me. Carly, can you please read the title for Council Communications, item number 351?
Request of Charles E. Long to address Council regarding stopping the stranglehold of special interest on city governance.
Mr. Long, welcome back. Glad you're here.
My name is Charles Long. Portland has a population of nearly 500,000 and a metropolitan area of over 1 million. Why? Because it's the transportation hub of the Pacific Northwest. Stumptown was founded years before Seattle. They came by horseback, covered wagon, sailing ship, by railroads, highways, trucks, steamships, aircraft, and recently by the freeways, I-5 and I-84. Today, however, we have a proposal to transform Portland into a third world transportation system, bicycles. Will our freight be hauled on the backs of bicycle riders? At least 94% of commuters and virtually all of truckers want and need automotive transportation. Actually, bicyclists are an impediment to automobile drivers, truck drivers, TriMet drivers, taxi drivers, to say nothing about pedestrians who confront utterly lawless and irresponsible cyclists on sidewalks as well as in streets. Transportation is the lifeblood of Portland's economy, but it is being impeded by a radical bicycle lobby headed by the mayor, who is pushing bicycle infrastructure to the detriment of improving the flow of automotive, bus, and truck transportation and creating commuting snarls and gridlocks, which put a stranglehold on our transportation system. In the process, a budget of the city of Portland, its sewer funds and every nook and cranny of city finances are being scoured to pay for a $600 million and probably $1 billion projected third world bicycle infrastructure, which would choke the already weak economy of this city. All but one of our city commissioners, Amanda Fritz, have bought into this scheme. They knew they have kowtowed to the bicycle lobby. Kowtow, spelled K-O-W-T-O-W, is a Chinese-originated term, meaning the art of kneeling and touching the ground with the forehead to show great deference and submissive respect, homage, and so forth, to show servile respect to. City commissioners have a responsibility to promote the overall welfare of this community. But all but Amanda Fritz have kowtowed to special pressure groups, including Merritt Paulson and the soccer lobby, which has caused the demise of professional baseball in Portland, which is, God willing, is my next dissertation on April 7th. In the meantime, the wrath of Portland voters await those who kowtowed to vested interests rather than what is best for the cultural and economic prosperity of this city. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Long. It's good to have you back. Can you please read the title for proclamation regarding the proclamation, and this is where folks will come forward. Council communication item number 352.
Request of John Munson to address council regarding proclamation for Farm Worker Awareness Week.
Come on up.
I apologize again. This is Helen Carino, the Secretary of the Board of the Oregon Farm Worker Ministry.
Come on up. Do you want to come forward, Jose? You can come sit up here as well. Yep. Welcome. Glad you're here.
Thank you very much. It is a privilege to be here. And as Mr. Munson said, he's John Munson, our executive director of the Oregon Farm Worker Ministry. I'm Helen Carino of the Oregon Farm Worker Ministry. And this is Jose Romero. He's our co-chair of the Cesar Chavez Boulevard Committee. And it's a privilege to be here and to thank you for having the proclamation. It's also a very great honor to be here to receive this proclamation. I also want to read just a little something. Being today is St. Patrick's Day, I think it's very appropriate that we talk about what the farm workers contribute to our economy. Since today is St. Patrick's Day and there's green everywhere, in the countryside, the fields and the orchards are beginning to turn green as well. It is a reminder that in the next 10 months, 175 seasonal immigrants and migrant farm workers will sustain Oregon's agricultural economy. They are already working in the fields, nurseries, and the berry fields. In the fall, they will harvest our grapes and cut our Christmas trees. Farm workers are the backbone of Oregon's $3.2 billion agribusiness. They deserve our recognition and support. And in conclusion, I want to also say that it is through the effort of the farm workers that the food that we put on our table is as healthy as it can be. A lot of times it's because the farm workers come forward with abuses of the work that they do, or the abuses of animals when we're talking about something like milk, that these abuses are put forward so that the community has healthier food. Thank you very much.
Thank you. You can sit. Do you want to add any comments?
Well, I think that Helen spoke of St. Patrick's Day, and St. Patrick's Day honors millions of immigrants to this country from Ireland, and it is time that we honor the migrants from Mexico and Central America who grow our food and make it possible to have for us to have three healthy meals a day.
If I could just add and thank the mayor for issuing the proclamation and just state personally that it is an honor that my children will be raised on the 3900 block of Cesar E. Chavez Boulevard. So thank you for your work.
Thank you very
much.
Thank you.
Jose?
I have very little to add other than Cesar Chavez was an advocate and the leader of the farm worker movement. And when you talk about honoring Cesar Chavez and the 175,000 farm workers that provide the backbone of our agribusiness economy, you're talking about one and the same. And so we're here in support of those who Cesar gave his life for, dedicated to their well-being. So thank you very much this morning.
Thank you.
Carla, can you please read the title for Council Communications, item number 353?
Request of Andrew Frazier to address Council regarding residential wireless expansion, fiscal concerns, and priority street policy.
Thank you. Mr. Frazier, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Welcome back.
The issue of residential replacement utility poles for wireless antennas really comes down to two questions. Would any of you like to have a 60-foot metal utility pole with a 10-foot high oil drum-shaped canister as wide as double doors and noisy commercial-grade mechanics towering over your front or backyards? Would any of you purchase a home with this equipment installed on the parking strip or towering over your backyard? I will infer the answer is no. Portland families feel passionately about protecting the neighborhoods they are raising their children in. Portland residents before me asked for your help. You answered with the priority street ordinance that was meant to help protect residential neighborhoods. We have been told this proposed Clearwire WiMAX antenna at 37th and Fremont is the first application for a priority 4 residential street under this new policy. We live on a priority 4 street, the last resort for wireless sightings. We and our legal advisors are anxiously awaiting final submission of Clearwire's application and the city's decision on this application. If the ordinance and contract is actually followed, we and our legal advisors believe there is sufficient evidence to show that Clearwire cannot prove this priority 4 street is the only and last resort. Additionally, there's also sufficient evidence that gives the city the right to flat out deny this application. Over the course of this journey, which you all are well aware of, we have found a troubling lack of oversight over this application and installation. We have been told OCCFM does not have the funding available to verify Clearwire's and other wireless providers' information and properly process these applications. Yet, a May 2009 audit of the Office of Cable Communications and Franchise Management says that the city of Portland loses $13 million annually because wireless companies are taxed at a lower rate than phone companies. Why is the city of Portland giving wireless companies this tax break and an unfair competitive advantage over landline companies, and at the same time telling residents that we cannot afford to do a technical review of wireless antenna applications? Why are wireless companies given the rights of utilities in the right-of-way but taxed at a much lower rate? Portland leadership has routinely found the will and the way to raise millions of dollars for projects they feel passionate for. At what point will Portland leadership feel passionate enough for our families and the homes we raise them in to find the will and the way to protect us, our property, and our neighborhoods? Would any of you like to have a 60-foot metal utility pole with a 10-foot-high oil drum-shaped canister as wide as double doors and noisy commercial-grade mechanics towering over your front or backyards? Neither would I. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Frazier. Appreciate your testimony. Now we're transitioning into the state of the arts, and it starts with council communication item. Would you please read the title for 354?
Request of Sarah Duger and Flash Choir to address council regarding citizen participation in the arts.
Good morning.
Good morning. Choir? My name's Sarah Duger. This is my colleague, Pat Janowski. We run the Flash Choir, a free and non-audition choir here in Portland. We were founded 3 years ago for the TBA Festival through PICA. We're going to be performing a piece today called Evolution, which is a poem by William Stafford set to music by me, and done in part as a result of a grant from the Regional Arts and Culture Council. So we really appreciate being here and to start this exciting day off with a little music.
The thing is, I'm still an animal. What is a spirit? I wonder, but I only wonder. My mouth.
Wow. Was awesome. Carla, can you please read the time certain item? It's a report to council, item number 355.
355, accept RAC's 2009 State of the Arts report.
And with us today is the Regional Arts and Cultural Council that serves the Tri-County area, including 80 arts organizations. In the city of Portland alone, hundreds of school children and families and countless artists. RAC is here today to present this year's State of the Arts report, and I'm pleased now to turn it over to RAC Executive Director, who does a fantastic job on just a little bit of money, Eloise Damrosch, and our great champion, cheerleader, and more, the RAC Board Chair, Carol Morris.
Thank you very much. Good morning. Happy St. Patrick's Day. Especially to you, Amanda. You have the best outfit on up there.
Yeah, what's with these two?
I don't know.
They have remedial St. Patrick's Day.
Oops.
Okay, I'm sorry. You. And I had to hand it to him. Sorry, please.
That's okay. With me today is Johanna Kim, who is the wonderful creative administrative assistant for RAC and who has done this beautiful slideshow you'll see, and of course, Eloise Damrosch. I'm Carol Morris. I'm chair of RAC, and I also serve on the boards of the Creative Advocacy Network and the Portland Opera. In my non-volunteer time, although my bosses don't think I have much of that, I run the PGE Foundation for Portland General Electric. Thank you for giving Eloise and I the time to update you on the state of the arts in Portland. Thanks to your generosity and advocacy for artists and arts organizations, we have been weathering this economy better than other cities in the country in the arts. Just look around these chambers. Here are the artists, the arts organizations, arts board volunteers, business people, and students who want city council to know of their dedication and belief in the arts as a way to vitalize our city, to build our economy, to teach our children, and to feed our souls. Portland is home to more than 200 arts organizations and countless artists of all disciplines. Our regional arts community extends to Clackamas and Washington counties. Yes, Portland is the epicenter, but amazing art is also happening in Beaverton, Hillsborough, Forest Grove, Tigard, Tualatin, Lake Oswego, Gresham, West Lynn, Oregon City, Estacada, and Malala. Arts in the region include music, theater, dance, film, literary arts, visual arts, cultural festivals, and arts education. It's Tchaikovsky and Shakespeare, but also cellos in the fountains, ballet dancers in nightclubs, and kids learning math using music and visual arts. Our combined audience in the Portland region is more than 2.6 million people a year, with an economic impact of more than $318 million. Many of these artists are also part of our skilled workforce, powering creativity in our businesses and fueling innovation in our manufacturing industries. Just ask Chandra Brown at United Streetcar. Now on to RAC. RAC's mission is to integrate arts and culture into all aspects of community life. With tremendous support from the City of Portland and added contributions from Multnomah, Clackamas, and Washington counties and Metro, RAC supports the arts community in a variety of ways. Now Eloise, RAC's dynamic executive director, will show you how.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that good introduction, and good morning, all of you. Thank you for having us, Mayor Adams and commissioners. The City of Portland has clearly been with us every step of the way, and this bar chart will show you the trend that's definitely going in the right direction. We've had a few little dips along the way with budget cutting, but thanks to your commitment to the arts and your dedication, we've been able to keep that trend going. And as Carol mentioned, I was at a meeting not long ago of my colleagues from around the country, and literally I was one of maybe two representatives of major cities in the United States that was not reporting a dire cut in arts funding. So we are immensely grateful to them. And then the next slide shows what we do with your contribution in as we leverage more funds for the region. And this comes from our partners in the counties, from Metro, from the state, the Oregon Arts Commission, and from time to time from the federal government, as well as now substantial contributions through business and from individuals through our Work for Art program and for the Right Brain Initiative, which you'll hear much more about in a few minutes. Now, advocacy, as you well know, is much of what we do, and it takes many forms. What I'm very excited about, and these are some of the wonderful CAN volunteers who are hard at work and who have been hard at work today mustering buttons for everybody and helping to pack city council. We're on our way towards what we've been talking about for over 15 years. Before we became the Regional Arts and Culture Council, when we were part of the city, and ever since, we've been searching for a dedicated funding stream that arts organizations and artists can count on to continue to support the work instead of having to rely on the roller coaster of public funding that you all know about. So you're going to be hearing more about CAN a little later on, but I hope that you will follow carefully what this army of volunteers is going to be doing over the next couple of years to build support for this very, very important initiative. And this will then be on top of the public funding that we already receive. And as I said, it will be money we can count on, which is really critical to a completely vibrant and successful arts community. And I also should mention that the size of this crowd today points out that CAN and the arts community can get organized and can mobilize our forces. You'll see more of that. Work for Art, you all know about it. I'm assuming you all participate in it through the city's program, has been phenomenally successful. This is the first year that we have had a prominent business leader in Greg Cantor from Northwest Natural serve as our honorary chair of the campaign, and he has been a wonderful spokesperson for what we've been trying to do in generating more and more campaigns and more contributions. His company has only been in the program for 2 years. Northwest Natural has been the number one participant for both of those years, so you can see how successful he's been in helping us. And also, we consider Work for Art as part of our advocacy work because all of the people who donate to the program become advocates, and they become active participants with their arts cards, so they become part of all of us. The statistics that you'll see prove that the program is growing and growing and growing. I'd like to point out that we had a 19% increase even in this recession economy, which is testimony to the fact that individuals really care and step up and give. And I'm also happy to report that we're 85% to our goal for the year of $675,000 with spring campaigns still coming. Now, the large companies like Carol's PGE and Northwest Natural and the Standard, you would expect to be big donors, and they are, and we're tremendously grateful for that. But what's really exciting also are some of the stories of some of the smaller companies that are stepping up. And the favorite story du jour is Burgerville. Now, Burgerville has only been in the program. Oh, sorry, did I?
Sorry.
There's Burgerville. Has only been in the Work for Art program for 2 years. And the first year, let's go ahead with the photo. Yeah. The first year, they really stepped up. The second year, they stepped up even more, and I'll show you some statistics in a minute. Yeah. But the story I want to tell you is that when our Work for Art manager went recently to visit with Elaine Calder from the Oregon Symphony about the Symphony's campaign, she had just learned that Burgerville had an 85% increase in giving in this past year. 85% increase. And so she was so impressed that she stepped up and offered over 100 free tickets to the Oregon Symphony to Burgerville employees, many of whom had never been to the symphony before. And so here they are at intermission at the Oregon Symphony.
Hey, Burgerville, yay symphony!
So most of what, or a huge part of what we do is, our grants program. And we support at various levels. General support, operating support is the funding for the top 43 organizations in the region with budgets over $80,000. That's our largest tier. And I'm very happy to say that largely because of your support last year, we were able to keep all of those grants whole and didn't have to cut anyone. And you can imagine, as other sources of funding for these organizations dwindles, it's really important to have that kind of funding, and that gets back to the dedicated funding stream as well. We also provide professional development grants for individual artists and smaller organizations to help them take a step forward in their business and professional lives, and it's been extremely important to them. And look at this total. 43 of the 49 that were given were first-time recipients. And we really love it when we see that we're reaching people that we haven't reached before. We also give special project grants, and this is for organizations that don't compete in the operating support category, and also for individual artists. And they're to support projects of all kinds that happen in the Portland region. And we have been working in the schools over the years, and you're going to hear a lot more about the Right Brain Initiative from Carol in a few minutes. We've been giving fast-track grants directly to schools who apply, but as you can see from the numbers, the amount of money and the number of schools that we're able to support in this is nowhere near enough and not equitable and not adequate. So we're happy to be doing this, but it's not enough. And then a category that actually, thanks to your support recently, we established was for emergencies and special opportunities, which you can see how happy these people are. Thanks to an emergency grant and to the huge outpouring of community support, last June, Oregon Ballet Theater was able to thrive, and we're exceedingly happy to be part of that success story. And every year we give a fellowship to one of our successful and superior artists in this community. We rotate disciplines every year, and this past year has been Kim Stafford's year, poet you're going to be hearing from shortly. And it's a wonderful, substantial fellowship that enables an artist to get out in the community, take his or her work to another level, and really shine, to have that opportunity to be able to support that work. Now, if you look very closely in the middle of the photograph, you will see Portlandia arriving on the barge. I'm sure many of you have seen this photograph before. But what you may not know is that the Percent for Art program here at the City of Portland is 30 years old. So we'll be celebrating this year. We've come a long way since then in terms of building the collection and building the program. And thanks to you, we're now at 2% of publicly funded capital projects. Recently, as you've seen traveling the Transit Mall, we have re-sited a lot of the work that was taken off during the construction, and together in a partnership with TriMet, added a major collection of Northwest artists to this piece of the city's collection. And there's an interesting story about this piece by Michiko Sugi. There was a fountain that was situated on 6th Avenue that had a stone base to it and then a sculpture in the top, and it couldn't be re-sited given the configuration of the mall. And so Michi took the stone from the fountain and actually created three sculptures. We're green. We recycle stone as well. We also are in the murals business again. And We partially funded 14 new community murals all around the city of Portland that involve lots of artists and apprentices and community members, and really helped to revitalize these neighborhoods that may not have had any art in the past. And then we actually got some national recognition because we now have the largest outdoor mural in the country. And I think Mike Houck is here, who was the ringleader.
Good job, Mike.
Those of you who use the OMSI Springwater Trail, I'm sure, have seen the heron that has been on the mausoleum for years and years, and now the entire building is wrapped with these beautiful paintings of birds. So thank you, Mike, for all that work. And we also are happily blessed with generous citizens in Portland who give gifts of art to the city. The Goodman family was generous enough to move one of the sculptures that they own in one of their buildings out onto the Transit Mall to add to the Northwest Sculpture Collection. So thank you to the Goodmans.
Thank you, Goodmans.
Thank you, Goodmans. We're also tirelessly always looking for ways to create more public art, and some of the pieces that we work on are actually in partnership. In this case, we worked with the Bureau of Environmental Services, which rarely undertakes public art because most of what that bureau does is underground and in pipes. So when there was a new pump station as part of the big pipe project was built, we were able to capture some percent for art money because there's a public trail that goes along the river. And so this is a gesture, an artistic gesture to the big pipe project, and actually uses several sections of the pipe itself. And of course, we take our role as taking care of the city's collection very seriously and are constantly refurbishing and taking care of the public art collection. And as you probably know, this is the oldest piece of public art in Portland.
Yeah, where is that?
Skidmore Fountain.
That's Skidmore.
Mm-hmm. We also provide public art management services to other entities beyond the city of Portland and Multnomah County. And in this case, it was the Housing Authority of Portland that was just dedicated this beautiful glass piece recently. And then these are some of the other organizations that we've helped, generating a fairly substantial amount of earned income to keep the public art program thriving. We provide a wide array of community services every day to thousands and thousands of citizens, from ArtSpark events to our web presence and everything in between. These are some of the things that we are constantly working on to provide information and expertise to people. And one of the most popular things that we do is our artist workshop series, where people come in and learn special skills. If you can read the inscription at the top, they come, they get involved, and they bring a friend, and they train their brain.
I just want to note that is not the city council on the far right. Despite what our critics might say.
Can you prove?
These are some of the topics that we offered this year. And over 300 people attended these workshops, so we know there's a demand. And now I'm going to turn it back to Carol to talk about arts education.
So recent polling shows that arts education is of paramount interest to our citizens when they are asked for their opinions on the arts. Arts education in the schools has actually been happening in our community for many years. Some of you probably participated in arts classes as youngsters. As you know, though, in most recent years, arts ed has been cut in many school budgets, leaving artists and arts organizations desperately trying to fill the gap with outreach programs that don't reach all students. Music and other arts teachers and outreach visits from the symphony, opera, ballet, and theater groups work diligently to bring the arts to our school children. With funding down for all arts organizations, their arts education role has suffered as well. This diagram focuses on a regional arts education system, and I underscore the word system, with the goal of providing equity in arts education for our children. High-quality arts education for all students. This systemic approach involves school districts, artists, and arts organizations private funders, social service programs, and young audiences. No organization is better positioned to bring arts into the schools than Young Audiences, who has been excelling at this for more than 50 years. They are a most valued partner of RACS. The Right Brain Initiative is in its second year in regional schools. The focus of the initiative is integrated arts education. The Right Brain's professional development component enables teachers to bring artist skills into their classrooms to teach core curriculum subjects, especially reading and math, and to expose kids to all types of art forms, art as a teaching tool and art for art's sake. School superintendents asked us to focus on grades K to 8 in the first stages of the Right Brain Initiative. Just imagine how much better high school students will be in terms of learning and preparedness if in K to 8 they've had an energizing, rich learning experience. I think this initiative will help with Portland Public Schools and the city's efforts around ninth grade counts. Integrated arts education in K to 8 can help keep kids from dropping out because they're unmotivated or failing. Hear, hear. We need systemic change for arts education. For years, the partners in this diagram have been offering arts education separately without a common goal. Now, with the Right Brain Initiative, everyone is working together towards the same goal of high-quality arts education for all students. Nationally recognized experts are providing the professional development and evaluation components of the initiative. It is an unprecedented cohesive effort in our region involving hundreds of professionals and volunteers. Thank you, Mayor and Commissioners. Your visionary allocation to the Right Brain Initiative kicked off the program, and it was leveraged five times over through grants from companies and foundations. I'm pleased to say that the PGE Foundation was the first private donor to the initiative, but we were quickly followed by Bank of America, the Standard, U.S. Bank, Key Bank, and the major foundations. We all were very motivated by the city's generous support of a new unknown program that addressed an issue our boards deeply care about. We're now in 23 schools in the Portland, Hillsborough, Gresham, Barlow, and North Clackamas school districts, from Free Orchard Elementary in Cornelius to East Orient in Gresham. That map will be filled with flags within a few years. Volunteers.
We couldn't do any of this work without hundreds of volunteers, people who serve on our board, people who serve on committees and public art panels and grant panels, the CAN volunteers now that are helping to mobilize the entire region. And I just want to give a special thanks to all of the people who donate so much of their time. And I'd also like to ask the RAC Board of Directors who are here to please stand and be thanked. As you can see from this slide, and this is only a part of this year's army of volunteers, there almost 400 people have helped us in the past year, and I thank all of them. And I also want to thank everyone in this room who does so much work in the arts with very little compensation most of the time. And thank you for coming today and being so supportive. You're wonderful. Carol?
I don't need to tell you that the arts community is struggling. They're struggling just as businesses, the government, and all nonprofits are struggling in this economic environment. For every public crisis you hear about, such as the Oregon Ballet last year, there are day-to-day struggles by artists and arts organizations of every size. Private funding is down. As a funder myself, I can confirm what you already know. Downturns in our business and our foundation's endowment negatively impact our grant-making ability. We still give as much as we can, but it's not enough to keep nonprofits whole. So arts organizations are doing their part. They're lowering their budgets, cutting back on the number of shows they're offering, taking unpaid furloughs, putting improvements on hold. What you see on the stage is still a fabulous product, but but backstage, there's a lot of angst. But you know, artists and arts organizations are a feisty, passionate bunch. They're used to a struggle, and they use their creative skills to find innovative ways to do things. They're collaborating like they've never done before. A new artist-organized group, the Portland Arts Alliance, brings together 60 arts organizations who regularly meet to figure out ways to get through this tough economy together. They're co-marketing, using social media, sharing networks, and finding creative ways to be successful. The Ticket Stub program, which gives a patron of one arts event the ability to get a discount at another one, is proving to be very successful. I personally have never worked with a more spirited, resilient, dedicated group of professionals. Our artists and arts organizations are worthy of our support. For what would Portland or any city be without the life force they bring to our daily lives? The momentum continues to build. Individual donors to the arts are increasing. The arts community is united and organized. Arts advocates are growing their army. Just look around this packed room. We will get through these tough times. We are energized, and we thank you for your support.
We have six people to testify. The first three are Roger Hinshaw, Bank of America, Holly Wilson, sixth grade teacher, and participant in the Right Brain Initiative, and the great Kim Stafford, poet, and RAC artist in residence. Welcome to the City Council Chambers. We're glad you're here.
Thank you.
Mr. Hinshaw, do you want to start?
I would. Thank you very much. Well, good morning, and by way of introduction, I'm Roger Hinshaw, president for Bank of America in Oregon and Southwest Washington, and I also serve on the Leadership Council for Northwest Business Council for the Arts. So when I first heard about today's State of the Arts discussion, I asked Virginia Willard if I could participate and say a few words. Since I wanted to share a business perspective on the importance of the arts, and because I'm a real believer in how critical the arts are to our local community. For more than 10 years, Bank of America has consistently been one of the largest corporate supporters of the arts in Oregon, and last year we were the number one corporate supporter, despite an environment where it could have been real easy for us to say there are more pressing needs in our community. So I want to make a couple of quick points. Firstly, the arts can and should be place to bring our community together, not a place where the haves and have-nots are divided. That's why a major focus for our local foundation, our so-called Arts Accessibility Initiative, such as our work to help the Portland Art Museum permanently endow free K-12 tours to the museum, OMSI's $2 Day Tuesdays, and free days at the zoo and our Museums on Us program. And it's also why we are so grateful for City Council's support of arts and culture last year. Together, I think we've made a big difference in creating more arts access, which in turn has strengthened our community in real and meaningful ways. Secondly, I've seen firsthand the positive impact the arts can have on community stability, neighborhood preservation, and even economic development. And that's good for Portland. It's good for businesses, and it's good for our citizens. From the renovation of the Portland Art Museum on the park blocks to the Armory Theater housing Portland Center Stage in the Pearl to the more developing scene on Alberta, I believe arts organizations can and do serve as a catalyst for economic development. Arts and culture is so much more than just listening to music, looking at an arts exhibit, hearing a lecture, or watching a play or dance performance. And because it's so much more than all those individual pieces, it's important that we not overlook the bigger picture. I believe a vibrant arts and culture industry helps build our economy. I believe it improves educational achievement and I believe it can even save at-risk kids in our community. And I know it helps build our local identity, answering for many the question, what's so special about Portland? So as we all continue to navigate these choppy economic waters, please keep front of mind the broad impact the arts and culture industry has on our local community. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you very much. Ms. Wilson.
Good morning. I'm Holly Wilson. I'm a sixth grade teacher at Rigler K-8 School. And I'm here today to talk about how the Right Brain Initiative has had a direct impact on my students. Rigler is in Northeast Portland. We serve about 600 students, and our students come from a variety of cultural, language, and economic backgrounds. 85% of our students are on the free and reduced lunch program, and 36% are English language learners. For many of the students at Rigler, their access to the arts begins and ends at school. Luckily, my students and I have had the opportunity to learn from a variety of artists through the Right Brain Initiative. As a teacher, one of my greatest challenges is to make the academic content comprehensible to all of my learners, and this can be extremely difficult, especially given the demographics of the school. Our artist residencies worked with me and other teachers to take the content standards and integrate them seamlessly into a variety of mediums. Dance became astronomy, theater became history, and drumming became geography and an unexpected lesson on teamwork and cooperation. This collaboration has pushed me to become more innovative with my own teaching practice. In sixth grade, students are already solidifying their beliefs about the type of student that they are and the role that school plays in their lives. And the Right Brain Initiative gives students the opportunities to say, I get it. I'm good at this. I can do it. And this year, I was struggling to increase student participation in class discussions, especially among my female students and English language learners. After our brief residency with the Oregon Children's Theater's Loud and Clear program, all students in my classroom are very eager to share their ideas. We constantly refer back to the speaking skills that we learned, and I even have students asking permission to stand up to address their peers at the front of the room. This has given the sixth graders in the Cully neighborhood of Northeast Portland a voice, and this is priceless. When I told my students that I would be here today, they were full of suggestions. And also let me know their personal feelings about the artist residencies. So I have the great privilege of sharing their voices with you today. My students say that the artist residencies make school much more fun and interesting. The programs made them want to come to school. The artists inspired them and gave them an opportunity to interact with the content rather than just listening to it. With the drumming circle, they learned that if they didn't listen and stay in rhythm with one another, they sounded bad. But if they all worked together, they made music. Rigler has been enriched through these programs, and I believe that every child deserves access to the Right Brain residencies. My students and I thank you for supporting RAC, for listening, and for your time.
Thank you. Great. It's a great honor to have you here, Mr.
Thank
Stafford.
You. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have to say, I'm in the right group if a business professional and a teacher and a humble poet are on the same team. We've got a good team. So it's a great privilege to be here. I'm very grateful for support from the city through RAC for Individual Artist Fellowship. And I just want to share a few things that I learned during that fellowship. First story, I was riding bike with our 12-year-old son through Tryon Creek, and the sun was spangling in our eyes, and Guthrie turned around and he said, Dad, what if the flashing sun is like Morse code telling us the meaning of life? And, you know, I was sort of processing that, and he said, but Dad, every forest would have a different message. Maybe there are thousands of meanings of life. And I thought, that's what RAC is about. There are thousands of meanings of life. And to have every voice, every child, you know, every business, participate in those many voices. We call that democracy. Second story, my wife said to me the other day, you know, you open the paper, you turn on the news, you talk to your friends. Every day you're made aware of things that are being destroyed, are being diminished, made extinct, ruined. What if every day you created something, some little thing, you know, an email message with a little extra kinship in it, you know, a fabulous meal, some music. And so, you know, I think that's what, we're back to democracy. What if every day, every person had that sense of creation? And one thing that occurred to me while I was on this fellowship project, sort of Kim's law of how the world works. The problems of our time are economic, environmental, political, but the solutions are cultural. The solutions are how we learn to talk with each other, how we learn to stand up as a young person and in an unafraid way to speak our piece. So in that spirit, I want to close with a poem I wrote for you this morning. It's called City of Art and Culture. Beside the OMSI submarine docked for good, the beaver whittles a willow stick. While at Brooklyn School, a girl shapes her poem, gnawing the pencil to think the words just right. On Ross Island, the heron shouts a guttural cry, while outside City Hall with his mandolin, Alonzo, fingers cold, brimming with song, plucks his life tune for tips. Mother Coyote hops on the red line, sits tall, gazes far, leaps off at the next stop, while a dancer at Jefferson seeks in his bones the coyote gesture that turns pain to grace. In the way water moves along the restless hem of Johnson Creek, the painter finds a line that transforms confusion into a map of the possible. Without the poet's right word, the musician's aching song, the dancer's feral reach, the painter's sure line, we lose resilience at the downturn. We lack verve at the decision point. We falter when our children beg for joy in spite of all. It is for these reasons, friends, the way the creative heart and mind can find the dancer's path through tough times, that we are practical about our work in the city of art. Thank you.
Beautiful. The next three invited testimony will be Jack Graves, Burgerville, participant as we've heard, Work for Art, Elaine Calder with the Symphony, and Jessica Jarrett with Creative Advocacy Network, CAN.
Mr. Mayor?
Yeah.
May I bring up our final testifier with me so that there are more of us at the
We'll do the next round. Welcome to City Council. Welcome back to City Council. Glad you're here. Mr. Graves.
Thank you for inviting me today. My name is Jack Graves, Chief Cultural Officer for Burgerville Restaurants.
Chief Cultural Officer.
That's correct.
That's an awesome title.
Probably no accident that I'm here today. So, having been with our company for over 33 years now, we've always had giving campaigns, and they've always been very successful. Over the years, we've tried all kinds of different things to have employees give more freely and more generously. And we've really used our mission, Serve with Love, which is how we manage our company. We've used it to help direct us to what's next for Burgerville and for Burgerville employees and for the communities that we do business in. 2 years ago, we identified a new partner in Work for Arts. they came in and said that they would offer another choice for our employees. And our old program had been going for many, many years without much change and without a lot of new energy put into it. Work for Arts actually came in and helped us to generate more energy. In the first year, we increased our giving, which had been dropping for the three previous years, about 15% over the previous